Question from Sudama Prabhu is based on the article, why do we misidentify with the mind? Would you throw some more light on the first person and second person that you have mentioned in the article? Answer. The first person and second person are references to ways of speaking and addressing. When we speak ourselves, we say that is speaking in the first person. So I, me, my, these are first person pronouns. And you, your, yours, all these are second person pronouns. So the mind is different from us. In that sense, when the mind speaks to us, the mind will speak in the second person. Just as if somebody else tells us, do this. If a salesman comes at our house and tells us, please purchase this product, you will find it helpful, you will enjoy it. So at that time, it is the salesperson is speaking in the second person to us. And that would be the normal way for anyone else to deal with us. So that if they want us to do something, then they will request us and they will address us in the second person. So that is how the mind initially starts when it speaks. So right now, when I am speaking this, I may feel that this answering this question is important, but my mind may say that you have other important things to do also. So at this stage, when the mind is addressing me, it will be speaking to me in the second person. Why don't you do that? That is important also. That you will enjoy more. So this is an example of the mind addressing us in the second person. Now, when we listen to the mind, by listening to the mind, we identify with the mind. So, for example, the salesperson who has come, he says, why don't you purchase this car? And as that person starts persuading us, gradually we start accepting that salesperson's proposal. And the more we accept that proposal, the more we take ownership of that idea. And the more we take ownership of that idea, the less that person has to persuade. Because now once the idea is owned by us, we will do whatever it is to fulfill that idea. So, I have explained this with respect to the Bhagavad Gita 2.62.63. Sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho bhijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha sammohat smriti vibhramaha smriti vibhramashat buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyati. So this is the sequence by which we fall, and when we look at this sequence carefully and the emotions that are induced in us or the actions that we are impelled to do because of those emotions, then we can notice a subtle progression in the kind of thoughts that we are having at these times. For example, when the first stage is the dhyayato, at that time there is contemplation. And when we start contemplating, then say the salesperson comes and tells us, no, please take this new cell phone. And then we start contemplating on the person shows the cell phone, maybe it's shiny, looking very elegant, and then we start noticing it. And then that salesperson starts describing the features. So when the features are described, at that time there is the second stage, that is attraction. Sangha. So we feel, hey, that's nice. So that basically that person is telling us, why don't you take this feature. So at this stage, the mind is speaking to us in the second person, and we have started becoming favorably disposed towards it. And then, as the salesperson keeps advertising more and then persuading us more, then we become obsessed. What if I can't afford it right now? I'll get money somehow. I want to have the latest thing that is fashion. So what is happening is, although the salesperson is still persuading us, we are taking up more and more ownership of the idea. But so at the stage of obsession, the desire becomes very strong and we are almost taken ownership of the idea. So this is what has happened. It's the mind which is speaking to us. And why don't you enjoy that way? Hey, look at that object. That is so nice. And then, yes, why don't you enjoy? Yeah, yes. It is. How can you live without it? So look at that object. Contemplation starts. That's so nice. That's attraction. And obsession means, yes, you must have it. You deserve it. You need enjoyment. Otherwise, how will you live without it? So as these thoughts are coming in, our desire is becoming stronger. And from there, so until this point, the mind is speaking in the second person, in the sense that mind is persuading us. But when the mind has persuaded us in terms of at least making us accept the idea, so at that time, then still the mind is speaking, but we have sort of at least conceptually, not ontologically. Ontologically means in terms of existence. In terms of existence, the mind always remains different from us. But conceptually, in terms of our conceptions or our thoughts at that particular time, we identify with the mind. Just like when we are seeing a movie, you know, we remain different from the movie star. But to the extent we identify with that movie star, to that extent we undergo the same emotions or similar emotions to what that movie star is undergoing. And when that movie star sees some injustice happening, then just as that star feels angry, we feel angry. So once the mind sells its idea to us and we accept that idea, we buy into it, and from that point onwards the mind starts speaking in the first person, in the sense that now it is our idea and it is our plan, our obstinacy, we could say, if it is not a good desire, to get to it no matter what the obstacle. So we may remember, no, this is against my principles, I should not be doing this. Then, so when this thought starts coming in, then immediately the irritation comes back. What are these principles? What have they given me? Why do I need to follow them? Life is meant for enjoyment. Why should I lock myself up with rules? So basically, internally, we have started to develop, through this kind of thoughts, we start developing an irritation towards the rules. So this is like the salesperson has stopped speaking, and now the salesperson is basically his ideas have now gone into our mind, and I'm talking about metaphor over here, have gone inside us, and now there is an internal dialogue happening. So at the stage of irritations, now with respect to the salesperson is outside us and we are separate from him. The mind is actually inside us, but inside us there is the mind, and there we are ourselves as the soul. So at this stage, the mind's idea is accepted by the soul, that is accepted by us as our own idea. Then we start feeling, I want to do it. And who is stopping it? What is the scripture? What is this tradition? Who cares for it? So I want to enjoy. And so that from that stage of irritation onwards, where it is not that somebody has to persuade us, we are actually persuaded. Now we just think that there are some obstacles stopping me from enjoying, and I have to overcome those obstacles. So then after, from that point onwards, the stages of delusion means we get confused. Okay, is this good or that is good? Actually, I've heard some people, Guru Sadhu Shastra, say that that is good, but this seems so enjoyable, and delusion, and then after that there is oblivion. Then we forget that whatever sort of material enjoyment we may try to do, especially if it's immoral, anti-devotional, then it has consequences, and it makes our life tasteless. It makes us feel worthless for not being able to live according to principles. We feel tasteless because the enjoyment soon goes away, and then we cannot enjoy materially, and because we have gone away from Krishna, we cannot relish spiritually also. So actually we end up becoming miserable. Yahi sam spiritual bhoga dukkha yona yavate. We have experienced how enjoyment leads to misery, but at that point there is oblivion. There, because of our intense desire, because we have accepted the idea as our own, so we don't think about anything that will discourage or obstruct that idea. That's how we get this forgetfulness. And then after that there is buddhinasha, stupefaction, and finally there is pranashyati, there is destruction. So in all these stages, actually we have been persuaded, and it is we who are trying to get the enjoyment, and the intelligence is obstructing us, the memory is obstructing us, but we just cast aside all those protective barriers that are there between us and that particular undesirable form of indulgence. But we push aside those barriers and move forward and actually fall, pranashyati. So at this stage, it is the first person, because we have taken ownership of the idea, and it is we who want to fulfill that idea. And our intelligence, our memory, all these are obstructing us, but we throw away those obstacles. So this is what I mean by the second person means, when the mind, when it is speaking in its voice, it is speaking speaking to us as you. You're tired, you need some sleep. And then as the mind keeps speaking, then when we take ownership of it, yes, I'm tired, I need sleep. Now what will other persons think? No, they will think that I'm lazy. They will always find fault with me, no matter what I do. I need rest, I'm going to sleep now. So this way, once we take ownership of the idea, then it becomes in the first person. Although actually what is spoken by the mind only, but the mind has persuaded us, we have taken its idea as its own, and that's how the mind no longer speaks to us as second person to convince us, but the mind speaks as the first person to overcome whatever obstacles that might be posed because of our culture, our training, our education. And the mind makes us do those things as if we are doing those things. And later, after the enjoyment is done and the consequences are seen, then gradually at that time the infatuated mind, which has sort of possessed us, which has overcome us, now gets away from us. And then we start feeling, why did I do that? So we could understand this another way through the example of a possession. When a person, when a ghost possesses a person, initially that person feels that, oh, some other presence is coming into me and is trying to take control of me, and I don't want to give control to that, whatever it is. But then once that ghost takes control of the body, and then the ghost starts working through the body. So initially the ghost is coming in, so the person can observe, oh, this is another person, the ghost is trying to come into me. But then once the ghost takes control, then the host that is there, the actual person in the body, the original person to whom the body belongs, that person gets suppressed, silenced, and then the ghost takes over. And the ghost makes the person act. Okay, go and shout at this person, eat this, do that, take revenge against that person. And then after that ghost goes away, then that person realizes, where am I? What did I do? Why did I do that? So like that, just as the ghost initially enters in as a second person into our body, but once the ghost enters, then the ghost takes control of our body and acts as if when, from the external perspective, what is being done seem to be our desires, because the ghost has taken control of the body. Similarly, the mind initially speaks to us in second person, and then it speaks in the first person and forces us to do those things. Thank you.